There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to say, ahoy, or land ho, and not feel weird about it. So here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance offers access to the largest towing fleet on the water. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to say, shiver me timbers, and not feel weird about that either. Get more with GEICO.
Hey, Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
This is great. I get to talk about nerdy stuff.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thank you, as always, for making your way here, for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with the entire series. You're going to get three new interviews sent to you every single week. That's a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover those new ones. You can grab us anywhere you get podcasts. Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Don't forget to give the series a rating, leave a review if you feel so inspired. That always helps out so much. We've had some fantastic guests on lately, including original Hamilton cast member Jasmine Cephas Jones was just here. Talked with Two Cellos member Hauser, Ross Lynch. You know him from everything from the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina to Austin and Ally. We talked about his band, The Driver Era. MGMT was here. John Malkovich, Paloma Faith, Coolest Shaker, Natalie Morales, just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. And that's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, actor Paul Sun-Hyung Lee. He's in the new Avatar, The Last Airbender, out now on Netflix. We'll also be talking about Star Wars. Of course, he's in The Mandalorian, Book of Boba Fett, Ahsoka, and of course, you might also know him from Kim's Convenience. We're going to be talking about the generational ownership that fans felt about The Last Airbender through the years, his own nerddom growing up, and how that's helped pull off the type of dialogue that fantasy sort of demands, and putting his own stamp on the character Iro without mimicking the original accent from the animated series. Paul's going to go on to dissect his character's compassion and redemption arc, as well as how being part of the Star Wars universe has lent to his understanding of how these types of movies are made, and whether or not he was contacted to be in the now-canceled Rangers of the New Republic. All that and more, we're talking Avatar, The Last Airbender, out now on Netflix. It's Kyle Meredith with Paul Sun-Hyung Lee.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
It is such a pleasure to have you. Such an admirer of what you do and this series that you are really the heart of. I think a lot of people are saying that. It's first off, I just want to say the entire season, I didn't know what to expect, and I loved every bit of it. I love what you guys do. And I think I was a little bit intimidated because when you, you know, there are these shows that if they're, you know, they've got history. I don't want to compare it to Doctor Who because that's really overwhelming. Like, where do you drop in? But I found like, oh, how am I going to deal with it? How am I, if do I not know anything, you know? And you didn't need any of that. It's just such a great series that you all have pulled off. And I still feel like I'm part of the club, if that makes
sense. Oh, wow. Thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah, no, that's a great thing to hear because that's really what it's what we set out to do is to bring in new fans, but also to, you know, make the OG fans happy that it's familiar enough, that it is true to the original, to the source material, but it's still new for them as well. So thank you so much for those words.
Yeah. What do you think it is? What is it about this series that has compelled so many people, you know, to feel ownership in it through these years?
Well, you know, it's a lot of things. I think, it's great storytelling, the great compelling characters, relatable characters, but it's also a, kind of a generational thing, you know? There were a lot of people that I've, a lot of fans that I've spoken to who grew up watching this series. And so it was, excuse me, they watched it during the formative years of their lives where they're very impressionable and it kind of sticks with them because it sort of, you know, it touches them in a way and inspires them in a way during a period in their lives where they're just growing as well. And so, like, for me, that was Star Wars, right? Like, that was the thing I grew up watching and it's stayed a part of my life. And I think Avatar has the same effect. And every generation has their epic story of young adventurers going off. You know, there's the Harry Potter universe is another example. And then you have Percy Jackson. And that continues on and on and on. But I mean, Avatar, they've had such a loyal fan base and it continues to grow, which is really cool. And I honestly think it's because it is fantastic storytelling. And again, it's these characters that everybody can see a bit of themselves reflected in. And so it's fun.
Well, especially like especially in the past few years, you've found a home in fantasy, also mentioning Star Wars there. Do you find, as an actor, because, you know, in these type of shows, sometimes you have to deliver lines that might not be natural in real life, you know, as we're talking about Hero's Quest type of stuff. Like, do you find that this is a comfortable spot for you?
Oh, I love it. It's my jam. I mean, I grew up a nerd. This is like, this dialogue means it's like a second tongue, right? It's I slip into those worlds really, really easily because I love them. I grew up with them. I'm intimately familiar with them. So I get, you know, I kind of get the assignment in that sense. And yeah, the dialogue can be heightened at times, can seem unnatural, but really we're talking about, you know, this isn't a contemporary sort of society that we're trying to show on the screens. What we're doing is these are fantasy worlds and people are going to speak differently. And what might come out very awkwardly for us should roll off of their tongues and never mind how it sounds. I mean, it's like Shakespeare, right? Nobody speaks like that anymore. And so there is that evolution. So, and yes, I just did compare some of the dialogue in these fantasy elements to Shakespeare.
But you're not wrong about that either. I mean, you sure that can sound silly, but you're exactly right about that in that way. And that's it. I mean, because everything, if it's done right, everything's believable. And it, you know, and everything is believable with this.
And we'll be right back right after this. There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always on the verge of death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone. Up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Paul Sun-Hyung Lee.
So it's an easy seg to ask, how did you want to bring this character to life? Because here again, he's someone that's existed in multiple forms already. Like, what was your idea? What did you want to give this?
Well, you know, huge shoes to fill initially too. Iroh is a beloved character, and people are fiercely protective of him because he means so much to them, because he is a lovable, inspirational, nurturing, caring character who is an intrinsic part of Prince Zuko's storyline and his character development. And so it was with a tremendous amount of respect, reverence, and love that I wanted to approach this character, because I didn't want to mess it up. There are times where it felt a little daunting. It's like, am I up to snuff? Am I going to be good enough to do this? Are people going to accept what I bring to the table? And, you know, that's that entire journey was fraught with different decisions. And is this right? Are we doing the right thing? First and foremost, like I said, it is big shoes to fill. But what I didn't want to do was to do a bad copy of the character. You know, Mako Uematsu, who voiced the original character in the animated series, is a fantastic performer. I remember watching him in Conan the Barbarian when I was a kid. You know, that distinctive, lovely voice of his, that is, you know, has gravitas, but is comforting at the same time and is capable of such a range. I didn't want to go in and be a really bad impersonator. I'm not a mimic. That's not what I was hired to do. I was hired to portray this character and bring as much depth and you know, humor and love to him as I possibly could. I wanted to make him from a two-dimensional animated character to a three-dimensional living being. Mm-hmm. And that came with a set of challenges. One was I didn't sound like Mako. The voice was not going to be the same voice that everybody who loved him, because that's a very distinctive part of that character. But I knew I couldn't do the voice, and it would be foolish to even consider doing so. And I think disrespectful. Not only the fact that that's Mako's actual voice in the cartoon series. I don't speak that way. And the other element was, for me, was I was fan cast as Iroh in 2018, almost immediately once people started talking, when Netflix announced that they were doing a live action adaptation. And I think a lot of it had to do with, of course, I look like the animated version. I've got, you know, Asian, got no hair, got the beard rocking. And I was playing a character at the time, Mr. Kim from Kim's Convenience, who spoke with an accent. And, you know, the difference between those two, though, is, you know, A, Mako's accent is Japanese. Mr. Kim's is Korean. So it's a different accent altogether. B, the accent that I used in Kim's Convenience was from a lived experience. That's my dad's voice. I grew up with it. It's an intrinsic part of who I am. I pay honor to my dad by using it, and I never tried to use it. I always tried to use it for good, not for evil. You know what I mean? It was never to make fun of my dad or make fun of people with accents or this or that. And so that was a big thing. We had a discussion with Albert Kim, who's a head showrunner, about using an accent and employing one. And I didn't want to, because I didn't want to be I didn't want to be disrespectful to the memory of Mako, but I didn't want to be that accent guy. I'm a crafted actor, and I think I proved it as well through Kim's Convenience, because a lot of people thought I actually spoke with an accent, and they're often very shocked when they hear my real voice. And so all those things in mind, I thought, okay, what can I focus on? Because I am not going to be a mimic. I'm not going to imitate Mako. I need to make this character my own, because I'm an actor. I'm an artist. I need to bring my own elements to it. So in studying Iroh and watching the series, because I was a fan of the series beforehand, the things that really stuck out for me about Iroh that I really wanted to get across was his compassion, his love for family, his love for Zuko, the tremendous amount of loss he felt in terms of losing his son, Lu-Ten, but also realizing that his life trajectory had been, the first part of his life was basically, he was on the wrong path. And it took the death of his son to realize that this was not his way, and to make that shift and to change from the dreaded dragon of the West to Uncle Iroh, who loves Zuko. And that's the one thing that we really worked on hard, Dallas and I, was that relationship between the two. I think we brought it a level of depth, especially in first season, that you don't see in the first book of the animated series. they delve into it a little bit later in the animated series, but it was such a gift and such a pleasure to have that opportunity to play those new scenes. And spoiler alert, I'm talking about episode 4, Lu Ten's funeral. Dallas just rocked that scene as a lovely, lovely, young, naive, compassionate Zuko who tries to do the proper thing and say these empty words, but then realizing that it's hollow and him going back and really sort of telling that lovely, lovely tale about Lu Ten and their connection. And so those are the elements of Iroh that I really want to bring first and foremost. And I think so far, so good. The fans have seen it. There is that. And, you know, I didn't want to lose the joviality of Iroh as well. There are moments in there. But the thing is, when you're condensing 22 half-hour episodes into 8 one-hour episodes, there's not a lot of time to focus on certain elements of the characters that people like. And so he might not be as humorous as he was in the cartoon, but what I think was a richness of depth and background and motivation for Iroh as to why he's with Zuko and what he's doing there. And so that's just for me, it was staying true to the spirit of Iroh and bringing my own sort of lived experiences to help inform that.
Yeah, there's a moment where the Earthbender says you have no humanity, and there's just a look in your eye, yeah. You know, and it's just one of those moments where it's like that did so much more than any line could have done, you know.
I got to give props to Albert Nasrallah, who played the Earthbending soldier. I mean, my gosh, I'm getting these big fat lobs up in here, like they're just setting them up for me to smash down, right? And you're only as good as your scene partner, and with Dallas and with Albert and with everybody that I had a scene with, and Gordon, the new prison scenes, they make it so easy because they give so much. And, you know, they deserve that recognition, right? And I benefit from that directly. But I think the whole scene and the story benefits from that as well, because they're so memorable, because they're so grounded and so real. And that's what we wanted to bring as well. Like, I wanted to bring a really grounded Iroh.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Paul Sun-Hyung Lee. To have this conversation where, you know, in a lot of movies, there's the obvious good guy and there's the obvious bad guy. And we're pretty sure we know who the good guys and the bad guys are here. Right. But for you all, you know, to be these firebenders and as a culture are wreaking havoc and destruction, but to be as part of your journey as the airbender, you know, like we don't usually get that. Usually the bad guys show up when they're the obstacle.
Yeah.
And so being on your journey, you know, yes, we're thinking, okay, maybe this is a redemption story, but you don't know, right? But it's such an interesting way of telling the story that I so appreciated, because we don't get that, you know?
Yeah, there's a lovely complexity to it as well, where things aren't as simple as it may seem. And I love that the writers have layered that in. You know, you look at Iroh, for example, and you go, okay, well, you know, he's a lovely, caring, compassionate man. But those scenes with the earthbending soldier shows he was vicious and ruthless in battle. He laid siege to a city that was filled with women and children and basically tried to starve them out for 600 days. He killed, you know, hundreds. He was responsible for the death of hundreds, if not thousands, of human beings. And so he's not clean either. And he's on his sort of redemption. And that's what it's never, life is never as simple as that. And I think when stories, I mean, and there's a place for it in stories, absolutely, good versus bad, and you have those clear delineations, but it's always so much more interesting, I find, when you can, you know, weave in those subtleties. It's like, yeah, you know, I don't agree, but I kind of see where they're coming from. You know, it's very rare that it's as cut and dry as we would like it to be sometimes.
And with the elements, it sort of being a paper, rock, scissors game with everyone. And in the end, you know, you just see these battles. And when I, you know, you watch these shows and you think about what's going on in the real world, and you're just like, and war is the dumbest thing that you could ever have. Mm-hmm. And it just plays so well with that conversation, mm-hmm. Which is another thing I appreciated in here. Now that you've done this and Star Wars, you know, is a part of your life as well. You know, life before and after being a part of universes. Has it changed, to quote you, your nerddom?
No, I don't think. I mean, it's changed the amount of stuff I've been able to buy, much to my wife's chagrin, right? Like, I've got a little bit more extra collector money out there. But no, I mean, I still love these genres. I think I understand a little bit more the process of creating and how difficult it is to create these worlds that we love so much that we often as fans take for granted. I mean, we are living in a golden age of intellectual properties for all these fandoms. If you're a nerd, this is your time with all these shows that are coming out. And I think there's also, we forget and we get spoiled sometimes, because I do remember that desolate wasteland of no new content other than comic books and expanded universe novels in Star Wars. You know, after, you know, Return of the Jedi was done, that's it, wasteland. No new toys, no new movies, no TV shows, nothing until the prequels in 1999. And it's the same thing with Avatar. Yes, there was an animated series and books and whatnot, but there was a whole, you know, 5 years before the movie came out, and a lot of people weren't happy with that. And then another 14 years before anything live action gets. So, I mean, there are times where we as fans, we get excited for things, but then in our excitement and being overzealous and wanting to protect things, the things that we love the most, we don't care what we rip through. And the one thing that I've really, really learned, especially being on Star Wars and on Avatar, is there are human beings working on these projects that have the best of intentions, that love the source material as much as you do, and they're trying their hardest. And with, there's so many other factors that, you know, the general public doesn't realize play into decision making. And I've become far more respectful and more cautious in terms of how I voice my opinion. Because on the other side of that, the internet has made it so anonymous. And so you don't see the effect it has on people. And sometimes we lose sight of that. And we make what we think is a very funny, witty comment, but it can be quite cutting and hurtful. So I'm very cognizant about that. So now that I know how the sausage is made, so to speak, I'm very, very careful about the criticism that I make, especially after having been taken, you know, participating in creating something. And I think anybody who wants to proclaim themselves as an expert in storytelling or this or that, make the content, put it out there and see what it's like. Because it's a great journey. But you'll find that everybody's got an opinion and not everybody will agree with you. And so it's always good to just be kind. Be kind.
That's an excellent mantra there. I know I've only got a couple minutes. I did want to ask, especially about the Star Wars stuff.
Yeah.
Were you supposed to be involved in the canceled spinoff, the Rangers of the New Republic?
That's what people keep saying. I was never given, nobody spoke to me about that. Nobody from Lucasfilm, there's never an official offer for that. I was really hoping I would, but there was never, I kind of let the fans do the heavy lifting on that. And if they want to believe that, absolutely. But I cannot confirm that. I can't.
Do you get informed of like the bigger plans of your character?
Nope.
Like you get the scripts.
Yeah, I get the scripts, and yeah. it's a wild roller coaster ride with it. It's like, oh, what's gonna happen next, right? And I'm at the point right now. I mean, at the beginning, I was just really happy to be involved, and I don't care. Let's do it. Let's do it. Now it's lovely that John and Dave have woven me in a little bit more to the fabric of that universe, and they're giving me more to do. And it's lovely as an actor and a professional to know that they trust in you and you bring something to the table that they want. And it's even better to connect with the fandom for them to like the character as well. But I don't think I've gotten to that level yet where they want to ask me, hey, so what do you think about this?
Yet.
Yet.
Yes. We all love what you do, and we love these characters that you embody and you bring to life. And that's certainly true for Avatar and The Last Airbender. Paul, seriously, this has been such a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Oh, thank you for having me.
My thanks to Paul. Avatar, The Last Airbender is now playing on Netflix. Of course, thanks to you as well for checking out the episode. Please, again, do hit that subscribe button before you get out of here so you can get all the interviews that we put out every single week. New and every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Great way to keep you up to date on those favorite artists and discover the new ones. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, NPR, YouTube for the video versions, or again, anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Then after that, after you subscribe, head over to WFPK.org. That's right. It was show starting 6 p.m. Eastern every weekday, Monday through Friday. You get 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. There's bonus interviews, new music, lots of music news as well. One of my recent shows featured the tracks, classics from Prince, the Chemical Brothers, Nine Inch Nails, Tori Amos, Sufjan Stevens, Natalie Merchant, Francois Hardy, The Band, The Vaccines, Noah Kahan, The Libertines, Billie Holiday, Paul Westerberg, Chris Cornell, Erasure, Modern English, Jack Johnson, Sheryl Crow, Green Day, Teenage Fan Club, and my interview with Buffalo Tom, who have a new record out as well. Just an example of what you get every weeknight, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. So I do hope you like and follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Bye, Kyle. Thanks so much.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger. And future stronger you can get started now by saving $28 or more when you join today. You in? We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need to keep stepping it up. And free fitness training to help you mix up your routine. Plus, most clubs are open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends February 28th. See Home Club for details.